Chapter 13. Of course I couldn't refuse, could I? Not in front of all those people. I'd been neatly impaled on my own rhetoric, and pulling out at this stage would have ruined the reputation I didn't deserve. More to the point, it would have lost me the respect of the troops, which was probably the only thing I had left capable of preserving my miserable hide. So I made a few appropriately modest comments about appreciating everyone's confidence and hoping I wouldn't let them down before sinking into a torpor of absolute terror, which, as luck would have it, was generally mistaken for fatigue. As a result, the rest of the meeting went by in a blur, so far as I was concerned, and if anything else of consequence was discussed, I must have missed it.
1. Quintus's minutes of the meeting are singularly unhelpful in filling in this gap, concerned as they are chiefly with the way the overhead lighting struck highlights from Castine's hair.
I did rouse myself for long enough to listen to a progress report into some suicidal scheme for disabling the Gargant, which Brocklaw assured everyone would be effective if the orcs in command of it were spectacularly stupid enough to blunder into an obvious trap. But given the intelligence of the ones I'd encountered before in my checkered career, this seemed like a safe enough bet. Other than that, I took no interest in anything apart from my bowl of tea, which Jürgen, attentive as ever, refilled at intervals. So it came as something of a surprise when all the civilians stood up and filed out, the quill pushers and cogboys predictably butting heads at the door, over which of them had precedence, while Morrel and the Miners' Guild delegation sailed serenely past them, and finally the room fell quiet. "Well, that went well," Brocklaw said, clearly not meaning it. Castine nodded. "They've agreed to the evacuation anyway. Not that they had a choice, but at least we won't have to waste any manpower herding them onto the shuttles at gunpoint." "Don't count on it," I said. "Once they had time to think it over, the tech priests probably won't go without a fight. At least most of the miners and administratum staff had already gone, which only left a couple of hundred civilians still planetside. A couple of shuttle flights, no more than that, although lifting the regiment would be a lot more time-consuming when the time came for us to pull out." "Then they can stay and fight the Necrons," Castine said. "I'm not putting any of our people at risk if they start playing silly frackers." "Glad to hear it," I said. "Not that it would make any difference to me, with my molecule scrambled by a Necron Gauss gun. And that would be if I was lucky." I thought of the other monstrosities in their coats of orc hide and hoped fervently never to meet them again. I turned my thoughts in more productive directions with an effort. I wasn't dead yet, and by the Emperor I didn't intend to be if I could find the slightest chance of weaseling out of the suicidal assignment I'd backed myself into. "What's the tactical situation?" We hadn't discussed that in front of the civvies, of course. They were best being jollied along with vague generalities and a resolute avoidance of phrases like, "We're fracked," which would only upset them. By the way of an answer, Castine activated the hololith again, and Mazarin appeared at a station on the bridge of the Pure of Heart, bobbing slightly in the current from a nearby air vent. "None of this makes a lot of sense to me," she admitted cheerfully. "But you're the soldiers. What do you think?" Castine, Brocklaw and I stared at the latest sensor downloads from the orbiting starship. The orc advance had unmistakably faltered, breaking against our battle line and pulling back in places to cluster on their left flank. Brocklaw frowned. "The Gargants veered off," he said. "Well, thank the Emperor for that," I thought. "At least I wouldn't have to worry about the booby trap they'd laid for it, bringing the whole mine in on top of me while I was down there in the dark facing the Necrons again." My hands began to tremble slightly as I thought about that, so I stuffed them into the pockets of my greatcoat and studied the hololith grimly. Something about the redistribution of the orc forces was nagging at my subconscious, and I felt my scalp prickling as I finally realised what it was. "The tunnel entrance we found was about here," I said, indicating a point on the opposite flank of the mountain from the valley we were so successfully defending. "The bulk of the greenskin forces were moving in that direction. The Gargant's unexpected diversion merely a part of the general drift. And there was only one obvious reason why the orcs' attention would have been distracted from the ongoing battle with us." "Fracking warp," Castine breathed, coming to the same conclusion. "The tinheads are attacking the greenies. In some force too, judging by the number of reinforcements moving up," Brocklaw said, studying the display in more detail. "That wasn't necessarily the case, of course. Orcs will gravitate naturally to wherever they expect the fighting to be fiercest. but it was certainly suggestive. Perfect, Castine said to my absolute astonishment. You know what this means? Nope. Mazarin shrugged in the corner of the hololith, her image shrunk to the size of my hand. Not my department. But of course Castine hadn't been talking to her in any case. It means the bloody Necrons are awake, I said in a strange mixture of terror and relief dancing down my spine. We haven't a hope in hell of getting to the portal now. I tried to feign disappointment while wondering how best to ensure I was on the first shuttle up to the freighter. Not necessarily, Mazarin chipped in, and the flare of hope in my chest withered and died. Luckily, it was only her image in the room with us, or I'd probably have throttled her with my bare hands. Not that it would have done me much good, I suppose, given the amount of metal she seemed to have in what was left of her body. If I'm reading these energy spikes right, the portal's being activated roughly every 17 minutes. Which means what exactly? Castine asked, taking far too much interest in what the bisected woman had to say for my liking. Mazarin shrugged, unless it was the air conditioning behind her kicking up another notch and bouncing her around. The Necrons here are probably still in stasis. The ones fighting the orcs are being shipped in from somewhere else. Securing the tomb before they wake the others, Brucklaw said. Castine nodded. Sounds plausible. She looked across at me. And they still have no idea we're behind them. You can be in and out before they even know you're there. Lucky me, I said, clenching my fists in my pockets until the nails drew blood. I'm not going to lie to you, I said. I felt a vague sense of disconnectedness after that, the reason for which continued to elude me for a while, until I realized that contrary to the habit of a lifetime, the subsequent statement was actually true. The harsh arc luminators of the main staging area just inside the mouth of the mine flattened the colours of the scattered equipment around us, including the power lifter against which I leaned, in what I hoped was a casual manner rather than revealing the weakness of my knees. Our chances of coming back from this assignment are practically non-existent, but it's also no exaggeration to say that the lives of everyone else on the planet, not to mention uncountable others, hang on whether we succeed or not. I flicked my eyes along the impassive faces in front of me. Not one of them blinked. I ploughed on, feeling vaguely wrong-footed. I think you're the best team for the job, which is why I asked for you. But I'll only take willing volunteers. If anyone wants to pull out, you have my word there won't be any disciplinary action taken or a word about it on any of your records. Because I'd be too busy being dead to worry about it. I forced the thought away. We're up to it, the stormtrooper sergeant said, the unlit cheroot in the corner of his mouth waggling disconcertingly as he spoke. I gathered that it was some kind of tradition in his squad that he wouldn't light it until the mission was completed. The little knot of men behind him nodded in silent agreement. Not one of them broke ranks, which I would have found astonishing had I not spent a couple of hours combing the records for the most aggressive and disciplined squad in the entire regiment. And Sergeant Wellard and his squad were it. Old-school stormtroopers. Quite literally, they'd been together since the Scholar Progenium assessors back on Valhalla had decided they were natural-born cannon fodder. They were, accordingly, one of the few teams to have remained single-sex following the amalgamation of the two former regiments which now made up the 597th, since there was no point rotating in replacements for the casualties they'd taken on Corania and wherever else they'd fought before.
1. Corania. The system where a Tyranid attack had decimated the Imperial defenders, necessitating the amalgamation of the 296th and the 301st to create the 597th in the first place.
Scholar-raised stormtroopers squads generally fight better than most because they've been together so long and know each other so well that they share an instinctive rapport no outsider can ever fully share. But the downside of that is that once their numbers drop below a handful, they become pretty much useless, and I've never understood why the Guard persists with the tradition.
2. Because the real reason for the practice is to provide properly indoctrinated foot soldiers for the Inquisition. Of course, fewer than 5% reach the exacting standards required, leaving the ones who don't make the grade to be palmed off on the Guard.
Right now, though, men who'd follow orders without thinking were precisely what I needed, and Wellard and his team fit the bill nicely. I'm pleased to see my confidence wasn't misplaced, I said. Apart from Wellard, there were 5 regular troopers left out of the original 10, so they were on the verge of falling below the critical threshold at which they would cease to be an effective fighting unit. Nevertheless, they would do. Numbers wouldn't help us on this mission. Our only hope was to move fast and stealthily, and that, I knew, was something they were bound to be good at. In the constant round of rivalries and practical joke-playing between the different factions in my days at the Scholar, the Stormtrooper cadets were by far the most adept at sneaking into the other dorms and common rooms to make mischief, and always set the most inventive booby traps, although I still maintain we had the edge over them on the scrumball pitch. In fact, the only team that ever regularly beat the Commissar cadets were the novitiates of the Adepta Sororitas, who seemed to think the point of the game was sending the greatest number of opponents they could to the sanatorium rather than scoring goals. "We'll get the job done," Wellard said, moving the cheroot to the opposite corner of his mouth, and the quintet behind him nodded in unison. Their silence was unnerving, but I suppose it was a natural consequence of the rapport they shared. Not a word or a gesture was wasted, to the point where, swathed in their greatcoats and hats, their faces partly obscured, they seemed almost emotionless as servitors. Or the Necrons themselves. An aura of almost palpable lethality played about them, which I began to feel almost comforted by, until I remembered the odds stacked against us. "Any questions?" I asked. Answer came there none, so I drew myself up, straightened my cap, and tried to sound confident. "Good. Then let's go." The evacuation was well underway as we set out for the lower levels, a steady flow of miners, administratum drones and tech priests walking towards the landing pads with the tense, not quite trot of barely contained panic, lasgun-wielding troopers guarding the tunnels they thronged through. We strode against the tide, which parted almost miraculously in front of us, each step further from safety, seeming like walking on knives to me. A babble of voices surrounded us like syrup, battering the eardrums, but overlapping so much that individual words and phrases were indistinguishable. "Comms check," I said, more to distract myself than anything, and Wellard and the other stormtroopers sounded off one by one, although truth to tell, and I ought to be ashamed of it, I was so busy battling my own apprehension that none of their names registered with me. Everyone's comm bead seemed to be working, though, so I nodded briskly. "Very good. General order," Castine's voice cut in. "Anyone in sight of Magos Ernolf, report now." There was an irritable pause, broken only by a faint hiss of static. "Anyone with an idea of his whereabouts?" Another pause. "Anyone seeing him, report at once." Great. It seemed the tech priests weren't about to leave their prize behind after all and were going into hiding until we'd left. Just so long as they stayed out of our way, though, it wasn't my problem. The passageways we strode through were getting narrower now, the air cooler as we entered the mine workings themselves, and I told myself the shivering which seemed to be gripping my body was simply a result of the falling temperatures. Before long, the walls around us were filmed with ice, and shortly after that, there was nothing for the ice to coat. We were in the mine itself again. Ahead of us, a cavern opened out, harsh with the glare of luminators mounted on poles around its perimeter, the dark mouths of the main tunnels puncturing the walls at intervals. Equipment and storage crates littered the floor, and I recognised it as one of the main utility areas we'd passed through on our amble hunt, little guessing the horrors we'd find in the depths below. Beyond this point, our journey would truly begin. "Movement." One of the troopers raised his hellgun, and the others melted into the industrial detritus around us with breathtaking speed, leaving me feeling uncomfortably exposed. A lone figure was lurking at the mouth of the tunnel ahead of us, half hidden in the gloom beyond. After a moment to recover my composure, as the rational part of my mind kicked in to remind me that orcs or necrons wouldn't be bothering with concealment, I strode forward, unconcerned, expecting to find some stray miner or tech priest finishing off a last-minute job prior to joining the evacuation. As I got closer to the solitary figure, I felt my spirits inexplicably lifting as I caught the faint whiff of a familiar odour. "Jürgen," I called out, "what the frack are you doing here?" My aide stepped fully into view, and the stormtroopers emerged from the cover they'd taken, looking mildly sheepish. "I thought you were stowing our kit on the shuttle." "All taken care of, sir." He produced a thermal flask. "I thought you might like a bit of tea for later. And a sandwich." He burrowed in one of his pockets for a moment. It's in here somewhere. I see, I said, silencing the barely audible snickering from a couple of the stormtroopers behind me with a quick glance before turning back to Jürgen again. And the melter? He shrugged, the heavy weapon slung across his back shifting as his shoulders moved. I couldn't let you carry your own provisions, sir. Wouldn't be fitting. Quite, I said, astonished yet again at the depth of his loyalty. For the first time, I began to feel that I might actually get out of this ludicrous expedition in one piece after all. I suppose you'd better come with us then. Very good, sir. He saluted, as smartly as he ever did, which wasn't very, to be honest, but more than made up for that in enthusiasm, and fell into step beside me. I motioned Wellard and his men to the front, and we set off into the darkness, towards the terrors which lay in wait for us in the frozen depths below.